Please help us welcome our speaker this evening, Cortland F. from South College Speaker Group, Newark, Delaware, Wednesday nights. Cortland, come on up here. Thank you.
There must be a few dogs around here or something. We know that, Dave. My name's Cortland Foos, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's August 28, 2005. I have a home group. It is the South College Speakers Group. We meet every Wednesday night at 8:30 down in Newark, Delaware. It's only about an hour and 25 minutes away from here or so. So if you're ever looking to change it up or take a little road trip, come on down and check us out. It's an awesome place. And I don't just say that because it's my home group. I say that because that's where this journey began for me. That's where I heard a message of hope, and where I saw something different. You know, I have a sponsor that I recently, about 7 months ago, just started using again after a few years of trying to do things on my own. And I have had the honor of taking other men through the 12 Steps to Alcoholics Anonymous, exactly how my sponsor outlined them for me. And I guess, I'm just supposed to share with you guys, you know, in a general way, what I was like, what happened, and, you know, what change has taken place, you know. I don't know if anyone else can relate to this, but, like, my mind has the tendency to just make the littlest situation into the biggest ordeal, you know? And the fact of the matter is, you know, my whole life I've had awesome people, like, showing me how to live right. And, you know, just I've always had, you know, people giving me guidelines to live by, suggestions, just have always kind of steered me in the right direction. And the fact of the matter is, like, when I'm willing to be open-minded to that stuff, and you know, with all my heart and all my mind, you know, life goes by a lot smoother than when I try and take it on all by myself and when I think I have the answers. But you know, it really is simple. You know, how I'm supposed to live my life today and what my purpose is here tonight. But I usually mention a little bit about my life prior to ever taking a drink. And I used to always hear people say that, and I used to hear what they have to say, and I'd be like, why are they doing that? But, you know, I'm absolutely convinced that the alcoholic that I am today, of the hopeless variety, that's the type I am, that the drink was just not my problem, you know? There was something deeper going on, and that started to show itself somewhere probably around the age between, like, 8 and 10, you know. And I'll touch on that a little bit more. Basically, you know, like, the life, I had a very loving, dysfunctional family. You know what I mean? I was a pleasantly plump little kid growing up. I was spoiled rotten. My dad, you know, did very well for himself, so I was given everything and anything I ever wanted, you know. One might say, as a child, I was self-centered to the core, you know, from the get-go. And if I didn't get what I wanted, I made it clear, and I would do everything I had to do till I got what I wanted. And I still suffer from that today at times. But, you know, for the most part, I have three older sisters, two older brothers, and a younger brother. And they're all afflicted by this disease, 100%. And so I'm the second to the youngest, and I had the greatest examples in the world of to watch of how this disease affects people and the ripple effect of it. And you know, things were pretty chaotic, you know, in my household. My mom's definitely one of us too. My dad's a full blown workaholic. You know, totally gets off on power and just, like, rules with an iron fist. He's very old school. And things were just chaotic, loud, chaotic, fast paced. And I was just kind of caught up in the whirlwind of things. And, you know, basically as a kid growing up in grade school and whatnot, you know, well, first of all, you know, I was picked on a lot, you know, being the size that I was. If anyone's familiar with the movie The Goonies, the Truffle Shuffle was something I was known for, and I had the Pillsbury Doughboy act down to a science. And, you know, that was just all fun and games for the most part. I was definitely like, I had a problem with authority, okay? I'm one of those kids, and even to this day, you know, you could give me all that I want on this side of the room, okay? And then you tell me, now, Cortland, I don't want you to go over there and touch that thing over there. There'll just be one thing over there, and I'll have all this stuff over here. And I just can't help myself. I got to go over there and play with that one thing. You know, like, I don't know what it is, just always going against the grain. You know, that's that. But, you know, growing up, I don't think I really had the capacity to recognize the dysfunction in my family, obviously, as a kid, and whether things were right or wrong. You know, I definitely know there was love in my house, you know, to the best of my parents' ability did they show their love for me. But I do know this, that somewhere around the age of 8 to 10, I started becoming very much aware of how I appeared to other people. And very much aware of how other people lived. And what I mean by that is, it seems like this mind that I had all of a sudden went into high gear. And I would dissect everything I did, everything you did. I would internalize everything. I would just dissect everything. And I just really couldn't ever turn it off. You know, and followed by that was this just awareness to an uncertainty of, you know, what the future holds for me. Am I doing the right thing? Are people watching me? And really just a lack of feeling a part of, in a sense, you know. And you know, and I'd be like one of those kids, and, you know, I went to a small private school, and I was diagnosed with ADHD and all that fun stuff, and you know, I remember I'd be in English class, and they'd be taking, we'd be taking a test, and, you know, there'd be like a fly flying around the classroom, you know, and I'd be watching the fly, and then all of a sudden I'd catch myself watching it, and I'd be looking around and seeing what everyone else is doing. Everyone's hard at work, and I'd be like, wow, that's interesting, you know, and I guess the best thing that I could conclude as to this racing of my mind and internalizing everything and dissecting everything was that I was just way too smart for all these people around me. And that at some point somebody was going to recognize how brilliant I was and that I was going to be put in charge of something absolutely wonderful and huge and great. And that never happened, as you can see. But you know, the important thing is that I'm trying to express is that, you know, there was just an uneasiness going on inside of me, and backing up prior to that, I grew up in a Christian family, and my grandmother was really big on going to church every Sunday, and you could tell that she loved her God. You know, I could even recognize that as a child, the way she spoke about him and what she would do in quote unquote his name or whatever, I found comfort in this God that I was raised to believe in as a child, okay? And I really have to say, somewhere around that time, I started to question this God. And it seems like as more of the unfortunate realities of life would take place, I started questioning this God even more. Because I was taught that this God that I believe in is an all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful God and wants what's best for me. And around the age 10, my father left, and all my older brothers and sisters just vanished. So it was kind of like you know, any sound structure in my life was just gone. And I was left with my mom, who at this point was a raging alcoholic, and my younger brother, who was afflicted with all types of illnesses and pretty much had to be monitored all the time. And, you know, I remember just really questioning this God. You know, so I got all this stuff going on. I feel like the weight of the world is on my shoulders at the age of 10 years old. And And I had, therapy, teachers, counselors, all trying to help me, you know. And the reality of it is, like, you know, they were all trying to figure me out. They're trying to figure out, why does Cortland behave this way? Why is Cortland always so preoccupied? Why does Cortland, like, not socialize well? You know, and I guess the one thing I took from all those experiences was the ability to BS people, you know, and just play the game. You know, play the game to get things going quickly, to get myself out of trouble, and to get people off my back. So, pretty much, I was just class clown, you know, up until about seventh grade. Then I found sports, and I'd have to say, you know, for lack of better words, it seemed like sports was like my answer to life. Sports was probably the first thing I'd ever come across that made me feel a part of something, gave me purpose, gave me the sense of belonging and fitting in and having something to offer. And I excelled at it, absolutely great with it. I lost weight. I was finally able to fit in. You know, and one thing I noticed was the relief I got from it, in a sense. The absence of my mind racing, worrying about the past, worrying about the future, you know, thinking about this, thinking about that, that was gone. And I was just in my element, and I loved it to death. And you know, I'm sure a lot of you can relate to this. You know, it's like in my nature to be excessive, you know, and I would do everything and anything to just enhance my ability to perform on the field, you know, working out, running, blah, 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 I would do. And one might say I did it alcoholically, you know what I mean? And all was good for a little bit. You know what I mean? It seemed like life got a lot easier, and I was just coasting through. And come about ninth grade, I ended up hurting my knee. And I remember my dad telling me, like, all right, Corlin, little bump, you know, do all the physical therapy, still travel around with the team. You'll get back out there next season. He's like, I don't want you ending up like your brothers and sisters. And I remember telling him, like, yeah, Dad, I don't want to end up like that. And really, like, coming from my heart, I mean, like, I don't want to turn into an alcoholic or a drug addict, you know? I don't want to inflict the pain and the chaos and ever have to go through what I had to go through, you know, as a direct result of my brothers and sisters drinking. And in that period of time, I can honestly say, like, I noticed, like, just that sense of depression started coming back around. That sense of just my mind starting to run. Like I was one of those kids, you know, where I had trouble going to sleep at night. I would get in bed, like, anywhere from 10 to 11, and I'd just sit there. And my mind would just race and race and race. And I'd look over the clock, and it would be, like, 11:30. And I'd turn back over, like, all right, I'm going to have, you know, 7 hours of sleep before school. And then, you know, my mind would just be racing, racing, and racing. And then I'd look back over, and it'd be 2 in the morning. And I'd be like, all right, now I only have 4 hours. And, like, I can honestly say, like, very rarely would I ever be able to put my head down on the pillow and fall asleep within, like, you know, a half hour. You know, it seemed like it would take me hours to unwind. You know, and then I'd wake up feeling like I didn't even get any rest. And it seemed like that time of not being able to play sports and being, like, just plagued by, like, you know, self, you know, just pity and depression, it would be so hard to get myself moving in the morning. But to speed things up, I went back out the following season, ended up destroying my knee again. And at that point in time, all bets were off with my sports career. And really, any future hope for me, like, going off to college. And it was just one more blow to my life. You know, one more thing that was very important to me that was taken from me. And it was one more thing that I asked this God, you know, why? You know, and I was just, at that point in time, I was just pretty convinced. You know, it was just the icing on the cake that I wanted absolutely nothing to do with this God. And that I just became a very, you know, just angry individual. And you know, without having any of that, the one thing my dad was concerned about was, like, you know, I went in that direction, like a fish to the water. You know, I started hanging out with the crowd that aren't playing sports, the crowds that are skipping school and doing all the things that they shouldn't be doing. And I was good at it, you know, because I had awesome examples of how to do things. You know, I watched. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like, I love watching people, man. Like, I can just sit and watch people and read their body language and just, like, be entertained by that. And you know, because I learned that way. I learned that way. And I watched my brothers and sisters, and I saw what they would do and how they would do it. And with that knowledge, I had a lot to bring to the table of partying with minors. You know, because I knew a lot of the tricks and all that. And I'll tell you what, having that knowledge gave me a sense of power and purpose with those people. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't even having a drink yet, and I was getting a sense of purpose and a sense of ease and importance that I found when I would play sports, you know? And really, it's like, you know, what I was looking for, you know, sense of belonging. So, you know, I started... Oh, actually, let me step back because I want to. When I was about 14 years old, I drank for the first time ever. So with one of my buddies, we just opened the cabinet to his father's, you know, liquor stash or whatever, and we, for whatever reason, we pulled out that blue square bottle of Bombay Sapphire Dry Gin, and we mixed it with like Kool-Aid and orange juice and. All I remember is coming to my friend standing over top of me, shaking me, and he's frantic, and he's like borderline crying. And I come to, and I got like marshmallow fluff in my hair and all over my face. The room's a disgrace. And he's like, "What happened?" He's asking me, like, "What happened to you?" And I'm like, "Dude, I don't know. What happened?" You know, like the first time I ever drank, I blacked out, and it was a god-awful experience. I crawled into the shower, and I'm laying there in the shower, and I'm like, "Oh, my God, I'm never doing that ever again. Like, please just get me through this. God, even though I hate you, just please help me through this." And, like, I really kind of swore, like, I was never going to drink again. So, anyway, I just had to quickly touch on that. So, you know, I started drinking. And I probably drank probably a good handful of times before I experienced that magical effect that alcohol produces in us. And I was actually... I remember I was with one of my best friends who's actually here tonight, and we're coming back from a party, and we're sitting. I'm about 16 years old. Yeah, I'm 16 at this point because I just pretty much got my license, and we're sitting in his driveway. It's like 5-something in the morning. The sun's just starting to come up, and we're just sitting there and we're drinking, and we're talking. And meanwhile, you know, my mind is still in overdrive. You know what I mean? Like I'm sitting there talking with him. But I'm, like, replaying what happened at that party. You know, I'm replaying, like, the stupid thing I thought I said to the girl. Or did I look like an idiot when I tripped? Did anyone see me? You know, like, that kind of stuff. Like, and I was actually really, like, honestly thinking, like, here I am talking to this kid that I've known since kindergarten. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know what? This is kind of gay. Two guys just sitting in a car. The sun's starting to come up, you know. And we're just sitting here drinking. Like, I hope no one comes up and finds us doing this. But... And it seems like immediately after that, it was like someone hit a switch, and that magical effect that alcohol produced, it happened. And it was the craziest thing, because you know how you can hear, like, the crickets? It was like, all of a sudden, I could hear the crickets. It was like the weight of the world was off my shoulders. And I remember thinking to myself, and this is all happening as he's talking to me. You know, I'm just, like, enlightened right there on the spot. You know what I mean? And, like, wow. And I remember thinking to myself, like, if I can only feel like this the rest of my life, I'm going to be all right. You know, and I pretty much made that decision to engage and pursue any substance or behavior that would free me of myself and my mind and the way I felt about right here, right now. Because if you're like me, and when you're not treating this condition that we have, this spiritual malady, this disconnect, this lack of awareness of a God and a direction and a purpose. I could be here right now and I want to be out there. You know, I could be out there and want to be here. I'm just never content where I want to be, but all I know is I don't want to be here right now. You know what I mean? And it's just like a lose-lose battle, and it absolutely is just, it drives you insane, or it drives me insane. So, you know what? For like the next 3 years, I had an absolute blast. Drinking and doing all the things that come with drinking, you know what I mean? Like, absolute blast. I paid some consequences, but you know, I learned how to play that card that I learned through therapy and all these counselors. You know, is my family life. You know, you know what happened, right? You know what my family was like. That's why I'm acting this way. You know, and it's almost like, you know, you give me an inch, I'll take a mile to get my way. You know, and I'll play it till it's dead. And I did that for a long time, and I got away with absolute murder. You know, I learned how to lie and manipulate and embellish things, and I thought I was good. I was good. You know, but I was just, the reality was I was good at killing myself and good at digging myself a deeper hole, and not even being aware of it. But I will say this, from early on in my drinking, I definitely noticed that, you know, I was that kid that always would be like one of the last people to go to sleep. I was that kid that would get like the crazy nicknames, you know, because of how I party or what I would do. And soon, you know, I was known for always saying, this is my last one, or this is the last time, you know, like I was known for saying that. And my one friend knows I was always known for saying, watch this or I got this, you know, normally right, followed up by like a screeching metal clanking, twisting, crashing sound. Probably by the time I was 18 years old, like, I knew that, like, when I would drink or put something in my body, that I wasn't going to be able to stop until it was either all gone or until I passed out. I couldn't really describe it as I now know it today, as that allergy, you know, that phenomenon of craving that occurs. But I just knew that when I would start, I couldn't stop, you know. It was like stopping time for me typically was around the time when the birds would start chirping in the morning, the sun would just start to rise, and I'm like, all right. Maybe it's kind of time to start slowing down. But other than that, like, I was very much aware of the fact that when it was on, it was on. And my intake started increasing. And the consequences I started to pay were getting greater and greater. And, you know, and, like, the authorities, cops, man, they don't care what kind of lifestyle you've been grown up, you've been exposed to, or what your sob story is. They don't care. You know what I mean? And bottom line is... As my need for more, you know, grew, my need to do things that I never wanted to do started to happen, you know. You know, like I said, I grew up, like, in a family that, you know, as dysfunctional as they were, like, they were very disciplined, had morals, had values. And, you know, like a lot of us, I'm sure, like, you know, I found myself doing all types of crazy, insane things to get what I needed to get my freedom and get my peace, you know? And it didn't matter what the hurdle or obstacle was. And, you know, I slowly started losing friends, and I slowly started wondering why no one wants to hang out with me. And really, I just started to think, like, they were lightweights, they were losers, they just couldn't hang, you know? They don't know how cool I am, so who needs them anyway? And I always seemed like, and I always seemed to kind of, like, go from group of people to group of people. And basically what I was doing is I was like going down this downward slope, like on a graph of like people I'd associate with, you know, like preppy kids to like, you know, kids who are kind of like, you know, badasses, and the kids who are just like, I'm just saying, further down the slope, you know, until eventually I'm, you know, starting to hang out with bums, you know, like thinking this is cool, you know. And you know, I think what I know, like, what that would do for me is it would allow me to tell myself, like, I'm really not that bad. Look at them, you know? By the time I was I was almost 19, and I had my my first experience with rehab, and pretty much for the next year, I was in and out of three, you know, inpatient rehabs, anywhere from a month to 2 months, all types of, you know, detoxes and inpatient stuff, or outpatient, you know, group therapy and counselors and medications. And bottom line is I was at a point where people didn't know what to do with me anymore, and they were trying to do everything. And probably by the time I was 19 years old, the progression of my disease was at a point where I actually, like, was, like, tired. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to stop. I was tired of hurting people the way I was hurting them. I was tired of feeling alone, because at this point, my solution, alcohol, it wasn't producing that magical effect it once did. You know what I mean? And like, dude, that's a scary place to be. You know, it's like that one last thing that was taken from me. You know, like alcohol was my bestest friend. It was there for a long time, and it was there with me through a lot of good times and a lot of bad times, but it now wasn't working anymore. And so I was like faced full on with the pain and guilt and shame that would amount from whatever actions I was taking, you know, or activities I was engaging in. And then there was no numbing it. It was just like pretty much it was like, you know, just trying to drink to black out or pass out or whatever. And to be 19 years old and to be at that point already and to wonder why or what's going on and just like feeling like you got dealt a bad hand in life, like that's not how I was raised to live, you know, and that's not how like my friends I grew up with were living. Like I became that hometown druggie that I used to look down upon and despise, and you know, here I am, that kid stuck at home, all my friends are off with direction and purpose in their life, and I just feel left in the dust. So I go to these rehabs, and my dad is very old school, okay? And basically every time I go to rehab, you know, I'd get out, my dad would set me up with an awesome opportunity to get my feet back on the ground. He set me up with a job, give me some cash, hook me up with a car, and from the outside people would say, like, Cortland's going to do all right this time, you know, looks good. And it did. Looked fine, you know, and by going to rehab, like, you know, physically I was removed from alcohol, you know, so no longer was physically dependent upon it. The only thing was, you know, I suffer from this disease that's a threefold disease, you know, physical, spiritual, and mental. And I can honestly say I never took any action to address the spiritual and mental aspect of this disease. I learned a lot. But knowledge only gets me so far. You know what I mean? And if anything, me being taught so much about my disease and never being aware of the spiritual aspect of this disease, like, it just, like, enforced my insanity that much more. Because I knew so much. I knew how my mind reacted to alcohol. I knew how my body digested alcohol. I knew what triggers were. I knew what that, you know, I knew what all these things were. But I just couldn't stop. And, you know, and I'd come back from rehab and I'd start a job and things would look great on the outside. And out of nowhere, I'd just be like, I'm just going to go have a drink. I'm just going to have one beer. Or I'm just going to do this time. I'm not going to do that. And it was like in total disregard for any of my past experiences. And I would just set that allergy off and be off to the races. And by the third time I went to rehab and my dad had tried to set me up with you know, an opportunity to get my life straight, and after I destroyed it once again, he was looking at me. He's like, Corum, what's wrong with you? I was like, what is wrong with you? Why can't you just stay away from the drink? You know, and when you hear that enough, you begin to, I really began to question my sanity. And pretty much by the time I was 19 years old, I was convinced that there was something mentally wrong with me. You know, and I'd been to AA enough to hear something in the literature somewhere where it talks about there are those unfortunates that are like incapable of being honest. There are those mental defects or something like that. And the way what I heard was that there are, you know, some people out there who just are never going to recover, never get this because they're mentally defective. And I pretty much thought I fell into that category. And I was like, dude, this sucks. And you know what? Who cares anymore? I'm going to die a junkie. So I might as well stop trying to figure it out. I might as well stop like holding back. And it was just full on. You know, so, you know, basically through a series of events, I found myself presented with my only opportunity to live somewhere. And because pretty much at that point, I'd burn every bridge. I had no more friends. My family couldn't deal with me anymore. And my oldest brother at the time was getting sober down in Delaware. I'm originally from Westchester, PA. And, he came to the hospital to see me, and he's like, Cortland, he's like, I know what's been going on with you. He's like, you know, I want you to know I've been going to AA, and I've been sober 6 months now. And if you want, or if you're willing to try AA out 100%, and he's like, what I mean by that is you get a sponsor, you get involved, you do the steps, you can come live with me. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, and like, And now, see, I've partied with my brother before. I knew how he lived. And I knew that he was just as much full of crap as I was and could put on an act. And I had this idea that we were going to go to Delaware and get it in, you know what I mean? And after a day or two of being around him and watching him, he was clearly different. And there was no alcohol in the fridge. There was no stash anywhere. You know what I mean? It was just like something was different. So I go to Delaware and I start going to this clubhouse and there's all these kids running around, this not kids, I mean they're like, you know, kids anywhere from 19 to, you know, 30 or whatever, but it's all these young people running around, all right? Young, happy, enthusiastic, energetic, annoying people. And I'm sitting there like hating myself. You know, like, just no hope for the future. You know, like, I'm 22 years old, and I've destroyed my life. And these guys are running around, happy, being like, hey, you know, what's your name, blah, 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 you want to go here, you want to go there? And I'm like, no, just leave me alone. But, you know, so anyway, this I hear of this group that my brother's sponsor was telling me that there's this group right down the road that these young kids started up. And they're real active and they're happy and I should go check it out. And I went there and there was even more of them running around being happy and loud and obnoxious. And I was convinced that there was some new medication out there that I hadn't tried yet. So anyway, about a month and a half went by. And I'm with no drink. I'm working part-time at this golf course. I'm sleeping on the floor in my brother's TV room. I got like a few dollars in my pocket and a pack of smokes, and I'm absolutely dying inside. I'm not sleeping. I'm hardly eating, and life is just so unbearable, and that weight of the world is just on me once again, and it's heavier than ever. And I'm just plagued by my past, you know? Just plagued by all these demons and all these things that I've done that I'm just so ashamed of and so guilt-ridden with, and just conflicted with myself. And I'm going to this clubhouse, and this one day I'm standing out front smoking a cigarette. This guy pulls up in a truck. He gets out. He's got like a wife beater on. He's all tattooed up. He's got a chin strap beard going on. He's got this army cap kind of cocked to the side. And, you know, like I've been to enough AA, and I've been to enough rehabs and all that. And then one thing that stuck with me was always look for somebody who looks worse off than you and go up and try and help them. And for whatever reason that day, I thought I had something to offer based on what this dude looked like. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm dying inside, and I think I have something to offer, you know. So I go up and I start talking to this guy, and lo and behold, this guy, about 3 weeks to a month later, becomes my sponsor. And the funny thing is, when I go up and I talk to this guy, we start talking about fishing because we both had fishing in common. But he starts telling me about himself. He starts sharing an experience with me. And he was basically explaining every emotion and every thought and every activity I'd ever done or felt or engaged in. I mean, he was hitting the nail right on the head with everything I'd gone through and was feeling right there, right then. And I was absolutely convinced that my older brother put him up to this, that my brother told him everything about me and that he could come up and talk to me about this and that to basically try and help me. And I was skeptical, you know. I thought they were out to get me. But the thing that was most, not attractive, but the thing that caught my attention the most was, if this guy really felt the way he felt and lived the way he lived, but yet he stands before me, obviously a different man, a man with peace, a man with purpose, you know, and happiness, that there just something doesn't make sense here. And I watched him. I watched him for the next 3 weeks. And, you know, and what this dude did that absolutely saved my life was he offered me friendship and fellowship. He never once told me what I should do. He showed me what to do by how he lived. He always made sure there was a seat available in his truck for me. He always offered me, you know, coffee. He always told me, let's go here. You know, we're doing this, we're doing that. You know, why don't you tag along? And And, you know, in those 3 weeks, I watched him, and every time he'd pick me up, this man would drive. He's not even sponsoring me yet. And this man would drive a good 35 minutes out of his way to pick me up for meetings. You know, this one time, every time he'd pick me up, he'd be like, "Corlin, how's it going?" And I'd be like, "Oh, Steve, things are good, dude. I got another day, you know, blah, 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 whatever." And I'm about two and a half months sober at this point. And I'm just hanging on. I'm absolutely just hanging on. And one day he asked me, "How you doing, Corlin?" And I tell him, "Oh, Steve, everything's fine, blah, 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 got another day." And he's like, "Corlin, I think you're full of crap." He didn't say it that way. He said it a little more aggressively, but he basically called me out on my crap. He's like, "Corlin, you can't even look me in the eye when you talk to me. He's like, you're shaking." He's like, "You know, when was the last time you slept well?" You know, I went home that night with the biggest resentment against AA ever. And I was pretty much ready to leave AA. And I was pretty much packing up my stuff at my brother's house. And I had what I like to call today is a God shot, a moment of clarity where I could see the truth. And I was like, "You know what, this man's right, I need help. Because what I'm doing, just not drinking, I'm not getting any better, I'm getting worse. You know, I'm 2.5 months without any drink or drug, removed from any trigger, any sense of what used to be with my prior drinking and drugging lifestyle. And I'm envisioning myself hanging myself from the rafters in my brother's attic." So I call him up that night and ask him to be my sponsor. And he tells me, "Corlin," he's like, "no problem. It'd be an honor and privilege." And he's like, "You know, my duty, my purpose is to, you know, share my experience with you with these 12 steps as it's outlined in the big book, exactly how my sponsor showed me them." And he's like, "If you're anything like me," and he says, it appears that you are. He's like, "You know, something needs to change, and something needs to change fast." And thank God he was armed with that awareness and knows that from his own personal experience, because something did need to change quickly. You know, I wasn't able to hold on much longer. So he got me running these steps, and I always kind of like sharing this just because, you know, it's crazy how I can have no experience with something in life, but be absolutely convinced I know how it works, or I know how to go about it. And I had a lot of ideas about how AA was going to work for me, and I had this grandiose idea of how my fifth step was going to go down. That you know, he gave me my 4-step instructions, and somehow or another I managed to write everything down, regardless of how much fear I had and all that craziness and all those crazy stories I heard about the fifth step. But I wrote it all down, and I had this idea that we were going to go to some beautiful park. There was going to be a waterfall. There were going to be eagles flying in the sky. There's going to be deer and whatever, and we were going to go over this fifth step. And that not only that, but because I had written down all this stuff and I had documentation now, I was going to be able to figure out exactly why I was so messed up and how it was everyone else's fault. And I was going to be able to go to those people and show them the paper that I was writing out and be like, "See this? This is why I'm so messed up, you know, and there's your name and there's, you know," but, you know, I had it all wrong. We pulled right up into that same parking lot in front of that clubhouse, and we did my fist up. And he pointed out to me how I've been living my whole life and how this self-centered life, fear-driven life, is just it's for the birds. It doesn't work for someone like me, and it's killing me. And, you know, as much of that, as little of that as I understood, the one thing that was so apparent to me stepping out of that truck that night was the fact for once in my life I didn't feel so alone, and I had hope, and that, you know, there was someone else who's experienced the same stuff I've experienced, you know, and for once in my life I felt a little bit a part of something without having to put any mind-altering substance in my body, and I got my real first little piece of hope and of what this program had to offer. And if you're anything like me, if you find something you like that makes you feel good, I want more of it, you know, and I just started rocketing through the rest of these steps. And it's probably about four, almost 5 months sober. You know, I'm making my amends. I'm out basically. I'm at a family event, you know, my mom's house. people, places, and things, old Big Trigger, whatever. And I remember I have an opportunity to make some amends, and really, more importantly, I had an opportunity just to suit up and show up and to be a part of and to help and not inflict any chaos or harm. You know what I mean? And just be a normal member of the family. And I remember I go home that night to my brothers, and I'm laying there on the floor, you know, looking up the same ceiling that I've always looked up at, you know, countless nights of lack of sleep. And I remember just feeling, like, so relaxed. And, like, I was going to get, a good night's rest. And I remember just having a sense of more hope and peace for the future, you know. And here I am, you know, 4.5 months sober. I have absolutely nothing to my name materialistically, you know. I have, like, $10 in my pocket, a pack of smokes, and a trash bag full of clothes up in the attic of my brother's. And I'm happier and more at peace and have more hope than I can ever remember. And I only say it because it's important for someone like me who came from a very lavish, materialistic lifestyle, who has had all of those things on the outside in order in the way I thought they should be, and I'm absolutely dying and destroying myself and hurting others in the process and wondering why. And here I am taking action I've never taken before and treating myself, you know, internally, spiritually, and with nothing on the outside, and things where you're just, you know, far better than I'd ever imagined. And I get to a point where my sponsor tells me it's time to start passing this thing on. And, you know, my sponsor, he got me into, like, service commitments early on, like making coffee. Like, the one thing my sponsor, like, didn't have to voice to me, the one thing he showed me through his actions to me was the time he made available for me. Like I said, this man would drive a half hour out of his way to pick me up. He'd pick me up for commitments. I had a coffee commitment at our home group, and for a year straight, he picked me up early so that I could go there and make the coffee, you know. And he literally laid his life down for me in countless ways. You couldn't have verbalized that. You know, that's something you just feel by watching, you know, the love that's shown to you through the people around you. He starts telling me how I got to pass this thing on, and how that's when the magic's really going to start for me. And I didn't believe him, and I questioned it, and I really didn't think I had much to offer. But sure enough, I started finding myself with opportunities to start passing this thing on. And in the meantime, kind of stepping back, I know I've been kind of all over the place, but I had this idea about AA that if I join AA, I'm life's going to suck, you know? It's pretty much going to consist of hanging out with old heads, smoking cigarettes, going to diners, and going to gay, corny AA dances. That's it, you know. And I've been proven so wrong. I probably did. I did more traveling in the first 2 years of AA than I probably did in the last 8 years of my drinking and drugging. You know, like I remember, like, he'd be like, "Yo, we're going down to Maryland to go, you know, to Baltimore to go to this little mini convention." And I'm like, "Well, how far is Maryland?" He's like, "An hour and a half." I'm like, "Well, why?" You know, this meeting's only 15 minutes up the street. You know, like, I didn't realize the lifestyle that I have found in AA. You know, the way of life, you know, and the fellowship and the fun that we have here. You know, it is truly unlike anything I've ever experienced, you know. But I start passing these things on. And the simple thing of it is that, you know, I'm doing nothing more and nothing less than doing what is exactly what was done for me. You know, it's clear cut, you know, and I don't have to do it alone. And I'll be honest with you, when I think I have to do it alone, or when I think I have all the right answers, like, that's when I start to get myself into trouble. That's when I start, like, slipping and falling into that self-pity and that guilt and that shame, you know. I start to become all these relationships with my family that I'd absolutely destroyed. You know, start to become healed, you know, and I start to, like, gain their trust back, and they're giving me responsibilities that I'm like, "Are you sure you want to do that?" You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't too long ago where I stole your car or went into your medicine cabinet, you know, or, like, whatever. More importantly, I was talking about how, like, I literally thought that something was mentally wrong with me. And, you know, my sponsor, when he would take me through these steps and take me through the book, he'd point things out, and he talked about the allergy. He talked about, you know, the mental obsession. You know, and basically, it's like he had the missing pieces of the puzzle that I have been dealing with and being plagued by for a long time. And, you know, like, this seems like the more I would try and pass this thing on, the more I would learn from it, you know. And the more it gets my butt in gear because, you know, I want to make sure I'm doing all I can to ensure that I give this individual the best opportunity and the best shot at this. Because, you know, I know how deadly this disease is. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy for someone like me, after having, you know, been blessed with all the, you know, the gifts that sobriety and living this life give you, to get complacent, get comfortable, and to start slacking or to start getting distracted. You know, because I get to, you know, have a business, because I get to have a family, and I get to have a girlfriend, and I get to have hobbies. You know, I start putting those things first. And not to say those things are bad, but like when I start using those things for reasons they weren't initially designed for, you know, like that's when, you know, things go wrong. Because I'm looking for meaning and purpose in those things rather than, you know, finding purpose and meaning through my God and through helping others, you know, passing this thing on. But, you know, I just started having a blast in AA. And I see, like, the importance of just not only just going through the steps, but, you know, incorporating them into every aspect of my life. You know, because my sponsors told me, he's like, Corley, he's like, meeting makers make meetings. Coffee makers make coffee. People go through the steps, get sober. But people go through the steps and live by the steps and apply those principles to their lives, stay sober. You know, and I don't know if you guys can relate, but, like, I've always been told things and shown things that maybe intellectually I can kind of understand, but until I experience it firsthand, I'm not going to fully grasp the depth and weight of it until I get my experience with it. And it's funny because it's like the things I question the most and are skeptical of the most that have to do with this type of program or some type of, like, you know, spiritual enhancing whatever are the things that turn out to be the best and most enriching for me today. Because, like, I don't know, like, I guess I still like to kind of go against the grain, you know, of the right way of how to live. But, you know, all I know is that, you know, the life that's been given to me through this, you know, that just takes so little of my willingness and effort, you know, like, what's been given to me through it is just... You really can't describe it, you know, because if I described it, I'd really be shortchanging it. You know, you got to kind of get your own experience with it, you know, and because, like, when I came in this time, like, I had absolutely nothing to lose, you know, absolutely nothing, you know, and my sponsor asked me, he's like, Corley, if you're willing to go to any length to recover from this disease, then I'm willing to go to any length with you to help you to the best of my human ability. But he warned me, he's like, but I am human, and I will let you down at some point. And he has, but, you know. I forgave him. So, I guess the one last thing I want to say is, you know, it says somewhere in our literature, and my sponsor even would mention this a lot, that God's got to be everything or nothing for me. Everything or nothing. You know, and what that means for me today is that if I'm not bringing God into every activity of my life, if I'm not asking Him for guidance or direction, then I'm shortchanging myself, and I'm shortchanging those that I might be able to help along the way, you know, and to connect with. Because I'm absolutely convinced God's got to be everything or nothing for me, because I know where I get in life, and what happens to Cortland when Cortland runs the show, you know, and it's just it really is a wonderful way to live. You know, and there's so much freedom, and there's really not enough to say in an hour about, you know, what this program's done for me and all the experiences. You know, you just got to get your own experience with it. You got to get in a car, you got to get with somebody, and you just got to start taking action, you know, without looking back, and just see what happens. Because before you know it, you look around you and you wonder, like, how the heck did this all happen? You know, the last 6 years have absolutely flown by. And there's been tough times and there's been good times. But there's been a lot, you know, a lot of good times, a lot more good times than tough times, you know. And my ideas and my perception of this world have changed dramatically, you know. And it's such a gift. you know, and it's just like life's not as serious as I thought it was. It really isn't, you know, and I lose sight of that so much. You know, it seems like the more I can set aside what I think is so important to me just to give some time to one of my brothers or sisters, the more freeing and just enriched my life becomes. Just by default, it's the craziest thing. The more I practice the opposite of how I was taught and raised to live is just the more rewarding way. But there is just so much here to experience. There's so much freedom, you know, and it really is available to anyone. Anyone and everyone who's willing and open-minded. And that's really all it takes, you know. So, I don't know, don't shortchange yourself, you know, because I know I've done it to myself plenty of times, you know. So thanks for letting me share.